Session number 10784,
Mr. Price, reel one.
Now, in 1939-40, you were with the British Expeditionary Force, with the Royal Warwickshire Regiment. Which particular battalion were you with then?
The 1st, 7th Royal Warwick. 1st, 7th.
This was a territorial unit?
Territorial Coventry unit.
Just drawn from citizens of Coventry?
Yes, at that time, yes. And immediate surrounds, of course.
When the German attack came in France in 10th of May 1940, can you tell me in detail what happened to you personally?
We were stationed at Rache, not far from Douai. And the battalion was moved up into Belgium. My job at the time, I was a Bren gunner and also driving a 1500 weight Bedford truck, one of these open trucks. And it had a gun mounting at the back of it. And we moved up to close to Brussels, I think it was. And we got separated from the actual unit itself. There would be about half a dozen of us, I think, on the truck. We had a wireless operator with us, and he got a message that I think the battalion was going back again to Rache because the Germans had broken through and they'd gone straight down with the Panzer Division to Arras, where our echelon was, second echelon, and from where we drew all our ammunition and rations. And, consequently, we were left without any reinforcements at all, either in munitions or men or anything. And at that time, of course, the roads were absolutely packed with refugees, people swarming down the road in the opposite direction to that which we were going. And every time I managed to get the refugees to one side of the road so that we could get up the other, the German aircraft came over dive bombing, and they used things like screaming bombs. They did everything just to churn the civvies up on the roads to prevent us from moving. So we got fairly well stuck down, and we used to take it in turns sitting in the back of this truck, shooting down or trying to shoot down these dive bombers, because as they came down, making a terrible noise, as soon as they got to the point where they had to level out, you got about 3 seconds, around about 3 seconds, where you could really take aim at them, because they appeared to be still in the sky just for that second as they were levelling off. We used to let rip at them when they reached that point. I don't know that we did an awful lot of damage, but they certainly veered off the road and out the way. And well, that went on for quite a while. And words came through, you know, about eventually, I think it was the Belgians had packed in. And we were left on our own. And we were told, I was told that if we could get back to Dunkirk, there was a good chance we'd get back to the country. So we became a sort of a fire brigade, I suppose you could say, with the machine guns. Anybody that wanted the machine guns, we were handy, we stepped in the breach. And I couldn't tell you who it was that we mixed up with, but eventually we made our way back, fighting our own wee war, I suppose, with this Bedford truck, and got back to the outskirts of Dunkirk, where everybody was ditching their transport and throwing things in the canal and We couldn't use a truck anymore anyway, so we had to destroy that, put it out of action. And I had a kit bag of things that I'd been given by my friends in Rush to bring back, like souvenirs and things like that, stuff out the jeweller's shop. I had to bury that, and with a rifle and a bandolier of 50 rounds, we set off to try and get back to England. So we got down onto the sand dunes. Incidentally, on the way back in the farmyard, we'd rescued a dog, a big Alsatian dog, who'd been tied up. The farmyard was being shelled and it was panicking. And the farmers obviously just got up and gone out in a hurry. There were things left on the breakfast table, the cattle were still in the stalls, so we managed to get them out, and I managed to get this dog off its chain. It was just about going mad, but eventually got it, and it stuck with me after that. Once I'd got its confidence, it stayed with me all the way back right to the beaches at Dunkirk. And they were shelling the beaches at very regular intervals. Every half hour there'd be a barrage come over. So we sort of expected the barrage and managed to take cover every time it came. And we worked our way very slowly down towards the mole. And there for quite a while. A shell landed a wee bit too near to the dog at one instance, I always remember, and it went mad. It went after everybody, but it still didn't go for me. I had to sit on it while one of my mates shot it, and that was actually the day before we got off Dunkirk.
Do you remember the date that you actually did get off?
The date?
Yes.
It was June the 1st. It was June the 1st. The only reason I'd remember it was the exact date was because when we landed at Dover, we came across to Dover and we landed and we put in a train, which eventually took us to Pembroke Docks. I think it was somewhere around about Swindon. We stopped in the station and there were tables covered with sandwiches and tea and what have you, and I remember asking how much they wanted for them. They said, "It's free, come and get it." So we dashed out, fed ourselves, and had a bellyache for the rest of the day. And at the same time as we got these, they gave these postcards and told us just to write to the next of kin, say we'd got back, and just throw them out the carriage window. So I duly did. And still have that postcard. It was amongst my mother's effects. And it was returned to me by my sister or somebody, I think it was.
So you know the date from the...
So I know the date from the postcard.
Just taking you back to the beaches, can you tell me about what degree of organisation or disorganisation there was amongst the British Army on the beaches?
Well, I didn't see any great disorganisation. I mean, it was, everybody seemed to be fairly well contained. I suppose there was always the odd cases of somebody getting shell-shocked and panicking or doing something stupid. But I can't remember of any specific instances that, would say one way or the other. Sort of living in a bit of a coma at the time. Number one was first, second, and third at that time.
Who was in charge of your group?
I don't know that there was anybody in charge of the group that I was with this truck. The actual transport officer, who was supposed to be in charge of it right at the beginning, we'd lost touch with him altogether after we left Rash. 2 or 3 days after we left Rash, that was us. That was a wee truck all around. I heard afterwards that they thought I'd deserted them or something. But I never saw the unit as a unit again until we got right back. After Dunkirk, we went to Pembroke Docks, and then the unit was reassembled at Hereford. That was the first time I saw the unit as a whole again.
Did you get a good view from the beaches of the actual evacuation effort that was going on?
I could see a lot was going on, but I think most of the small boats, you know, the fleet of small boats, I think most of those were away by then. Didn't see all that many. We were a good bit outside Dunkirk when we started, got down to the beach, and we just made our way down slowly towards the town, expecting to be squeezed up by the Germans any minute. But we managed to keep a jump ahead of them all the time. And ended up on the mole. We went on the mole in the evening. It would be the last day in May, the last evening in May, we went on to this mole. We went right up to the end of the mole. And there was bombing going on, and there was oil tanks that were on fire. And there was a big cloud of smoke right over the head. And there were bombings through the smoke, I think, and eventually we learnt first light in the morning that the base of the mole just wasn't there. We couldn't get back, we couldn't get forward. So we just sat there waiting for something to happen. And this destroyer came in, H-23, quite sure it was H-23, and eventually we all got onto that. And that was it.
How did you board the ship?
Now you're asking. Oh, I think it was. I think we jumped onto it off the mole. I can't remember exactly. I mean, I can't remember all the details of it. All I know is that we ended up on the ship. And
what were conditions like on board?
Absolutely cramped. We were sitting down all over the deck. Everywhere you could get anybody sitting was sat down. I think the whole destroyer was just about loaded to capacity with men. And well, the sailors got cracking and got some buckets of tea out and went round with buckets of tea. We passed from hand to hand. And I'd rescued, inverted commas, about a couple of thousand cigarettes, players in round 50 tins, which had survived getting dipped in the sea and one thing or another. So they were all gone by the time we got to Dover. We were lashing out cigarettes, everything that we had, we just sort of shared it. We'd had nothing to eat, I hadn't anyway, for the last 2 or 3 days, apart from I think it was a packet of army biscuits and an 8-ounce tin of bully beef. The last hot meal I had was right up where we ditched the truck. There was a naffy truck being ditched at the same time, and all the goods that were on it were taken off, and we put them all in a big copper, or somebody did, and made a big soup out of everything that we could put in to make soup. And I got a tin full of that. I think that was about the last hot meal I had. Right until we got back to this country. The rest was, during the time we were up in the countryside coming back towards Dunkirk, we just lived off the land into farmhouses and got some eggs and probably killed a chicken or two and cooked ourselves something up, and that was it. Got potatoes. But there was no organisation as such at all, as far as I was concerned.
Was the ship under much enemy attack as it went back across the
channel? No, it was practically nothing. We had one alert, I think, and they pulled the guns round. About 60 blokes went round with a gun, I think. A good job they never had to fire it. There would have been more British casualties than enemy if they had done, I think. The boat was absolutely swarming with chaps. There wasn't room to move. He just sat. We just sat in the one place and stood in the one place until we got right back to Dover. The sea was calm. There was no bother like that. It was a sea. It was beautiful summer weather when we came back.
Do you remember any of the other units that were on board?
No.
Any Frenchmen?
No, I don't think there were any French, to my knowledge. I don't know. I just don't know. Because, as I say, I got on the ship and I sat down, and that's where I sat until we got to Dover. When we got to Dover, we were met. We had to... tide must have been out by the time we got to Dover, because we had to go up some ladders up onto the quay. And there was a couple of red caps there, I think, that gave us a bar of chocolate and an orange or something. Dishing out some goodies or other. And I went on the train and that was it. Then we got to Pembroke Dock.
Now, can we jump ahead a bit and can you tell me how you came to be in the Commandos?
Well, after Pembroke Docks, the 1st 7th Royal Warwicks reassembled at Hereford. And I arrived at Hereford and it was a tented camp. And there was a request went round for volunteers. A notice went up that volunteers were being asked for special duties for... didn't specify what it was for. But to be quite honest, I wanted to get out of that particular unit I was in because I felt I was rather like a member of a flock of sheep being led to the slaughter and that lot. And so I volunteered and along with a lot of others. Then we were all interviewed and I was one of the lucky ones that got accepted. And we left a unit, I think it would be in July 1940. It'd be about the middle of July. And we went down, I think it was Plymouth or Portsmouth, to tell you the truth, I forget which one it was. Anyway, we got down to this barracks we were supposed to report at. Nobody knew us, nobody wanted to know us, and we were just hanging about there for about 3 days, till eventually word came through we were all to go to Weymouth. And other chaps kept coming in dribs and drabs, you know, before we went to Weymouth into this place. And we were actually called together for the first time and put on parade for the first time. And as a unit, then we were moved to Weymouth, where we found we were members of Number 4 Commando. And that was the formation of Number 4 at Weymouth. Our CO was a chap named Lagarde. And my troop officer was... Captain Dunning White. He was the chap that had recruited us. And I was in A Troop, I discovered. And A Troop had the Royal Warwickshire Regiments, there was some out of the Royal Artillery, there was some out of the Berkshires. I think that were the main regiments that were in number in A Troop at that time. And then that was the start of the Commandos, and that's how I came to be in the Commandos. And that was in end of July, I think the actual date, I can't vouch for it, I think it was about the 27th of July in 1940.
What kind of training did you have as a commander?
Well, to start off with, as the commander, the first thing they had to do was, I suppose, was to get us physically fit. We were nearly all ex-Dunkirk or from... one or two were from the independent companies that had been in Norway. So we spent most of the time on the beaches getting fit, and then we gradually worked up into doing longer marches, and we got bicycles. We went for long bicycle tours, touring the country. We were supposed to be eventually, after a month or two, during the invasion scare, when they thought Germany was going to invade this country, we were to be a first line defence. And we used to sleep down on Portland Beach every night. And with hand grenades and what have you. And we were in Weymouth quite a let's think, until November. From July, September, October, November we came up here, so it would be about October when we left Weymouth. But during that time, we'd had all sorts of training as far as getting fit was concerned, and marching and bits of unarmed combat, not an awful lot of very intensive training. And until we came up to Scotland, and we left Weymouth, we got on a train at Weymouth, and we were brought up to Gourock, where we went aboard a ship, the Glengyle. And that sailed up to Inverary. And we were aboard there for quite a while, and 3 or 4 weeks, I suppose. But eventually ended up in tented camp at Inverary, just outside Inverary. We did night schemes, and we did various other schemes, you know, just general fitness. And then the boat went away, and we marched from Inverary to Dalmelly. It was quite a long march, and I remember that very well, because it was pouring with rain, and I had a nice dose of the flu at the same time. We marched all the way to Dalmelly, the water swirling around our ankles as we were going up the hills, and we got into this train. Of course, there was no heating, no anything, there was no engine on it when we got there, and soaked to the skin, so we stripped off and wrung all the clothes out, and eventually got cracking, and the engine rolled up and pulled us out, and we finished up that night at Ayr. We arrived in Ayr about 9 o'clock or 9:30 at night, to find digs. One thing I forgot to say was at Weymouth, when we joined the commandos, right from day one, we had to find our own board and lodging. We had to find somewhere to live. And we got paid 6 and 8 pence a day to cover the costs of that. So we all found ourselves various digs all around the town. And we just reported on parade in the mornings. We were never in barracks or places like that as a rule. Of course, when we were on operation, like on board ship, and we were there as a unit, when we got down to Ayr, about 9:30 at night, I had to start looking for somewhere to sleep. Did it eventually, all got fixed up somewhere, and we paraded the next morning on the low green at Ayr. And we stayed in Ayr, I think, not very long, only a matter of days. And we were moved into Trun. And the RSF Pipe Band marched us from Ayr into Trun. And we marched up Bentinck Drive, remember, with fixed bayonets into the town, dismissed, and that was us. And that was in November 1940. And I got digs. I stayed with the Provost of Trun, a chap named J.C. Brown and his family, and I stayed with them all the time I was in Trun. Moved once or twice, but I stayed with them. They were extremely good to me, second family. And that's really how we came to Trun, and we used Trun as our base for the rest of the war. We left it, we went training over the different places, here, there and everywhere. Always seemed to come back to Trun. That was our depot, that's where we lived. In a similar manner, number 2 commando was in Ayr, stayed in Ayr. There was number 1 and there was number 9 in Irvine, number 3 in Largs. So Ayrshire became the hotbed of commandos. That's why there are so many of us living up here now. Real training, I suppose, didn't start before we got to Trin, and then we were put through it. We used to go away as troops. Troops would go to different areas, training. We'd go mountaineering in North Wales, cliff climbing down in Cornwall, potholing in Derbyshire, and of course we were all up the west coast doing exercises and ships on and off all the time. And eventually it was decided that they'd form number one SS battalion. And
SS for Special Service.
Special Service Battalion. And we were asked whether we wanted to. I'm getting a bit mixed here. I'm getting the times wrong, probably. But anyway, we were going to go out east. I think it was Bardia that was mentioned. And we got issued with all our kit, eastern kit. I photographed myself dressed up in the eastern kit with the landlord and landlady in the back garden. And away we went, and we didn't get very far because we ended up on Arran, I think. The landing was cancelled or something, and we finished up on Arran. And while we were on Arran for quite a while, the landladies all thought we were away out east, but here we were, ended up on Arran. And still doing odd bits of training, but then the unit was reorganized. Number 7 commander was going to go out east, number 4 was going to stay here, so there was a mixture. The 7 and 4 were intermingled. Those that wanted to go out east went all into number 7. Those that wanted to stay in the European operational areas stayed in number 4. Well, I had an idea that we'd liable to see more if we stayed in Europe. I mean, thought we'd see more action. But it turned out I was right. We got into action before the ones that went out to Bardien, and we went on a Lofoten raid. And that was on March the 4th, 1941. And that was the first real commando action that I was involved in at all. There had been one or two other wee actions before then, but